welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. I'm your host, Alex Baker. This week on the show, we are looking at Danish director Suzanne Bier with her 2004 classic, Brothers. We're turning on the show today to talk about Brothers, Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So this film is a great look at, you know, the cost of war on the home front. Just, you know, it's, I think some people think that if a person's, you know, a soldier's gone back from war, that they're automatically going to be okay. And you can see that this was definitely not the case. And it gives a look at a country in a war that, I'm pretty sure it's Afghanistan, right?
Right.
At a war, we just assume it's America. You know, we just assume it's us, and that's the only soldiers that are. We forget that a lot of other countries have tried to help us out in this war, and a lot of those soldiers have gone through the same things a lot of our soldiers have experienced.
The really good example of existentialism, where your life is determined by your choices. So it starts off with the bad brother having gotten out of prison, mm-hmm. and it ends with the good brother being locked up
in prison.
So it does a lot with the idea that the brother who has been in prison and been irresponsible becomes responsible. Mm-hmm. He changes for the better. And his brother, Michael, who goes, you know, he's the rock of the family. He does mm-hmm. everything right. He doesn't make mistakes, and he's in the service, and he ends up lost in Afghanistan. And what happens to him turns him from a good person into somebody who does something really terrible.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, it's just great to see these character arcs of how they go in completely opposite directions. Because you see his brother, Yannick, who was the screw-up at the beginning because he just got out of prison. And his other brother's like, you need to talk to this woman that you beat up during the robbery to, you know, apologize and make amends. And he's like, you know, no. And then even at that welcome home party, he's just being belligerent. And he's getting drunk all the time. But then when his brother's gone, they think he's dead and everything. That's when he turns up and becomes a better person, and he actually becomes a good guy. And then you see his other guy, who's the rock, who does everything right, like you said. And then when he gets home, he's just a complete mess. And then he just becomes very violent, almost kills his wife and kids.
Yeah, it's a sobering story, and it's done with great subtlety in the mm-hmm. movie. You really feel what's going on with both of the brothers. You can feel the desire to be a better person, to start over with the younger brother who's the screw up, as you put it. And then the older one is who's played by Ulrich Thompson, is almost set up, because if you do everything right, I mean, the one day you do something wrong kind of negates, or mm-hmm. feels like it negates, all the good you did. I like to use it as an example of the paradox of what do you do when your only choices are to be the hammer or the nail.
Yeah, and you could just see how that choice that he made to kill that guy in the POW camp to get himself free, and just how that's affected on not only the scene that's really hard, it's pretty harsh, is when he's going to meet the wife. Mm-hmm. And then he sees that she has a kid, and she's just being, oh, thank you. Because he can't bear to tell her the truth, so he tells, oh, I saw him. He's still out there alive. And she's like, thank you for giving me hope. And you could tell him that's the same night that when he just flips out at his family and beats up, you know, and almost kills them.
The scene where he actually beats his comrade is, you know, like the radar technician to death. You don't see anything, actually. It's mm-hmm. all just outside the frame. You hear the thuds. If you turn the sound off, like any movie, Psycho, for example, mm-hmm. it's not scary anymore. When you turn the sound back on, it you fill it in your mind, and it mm-hmm. just seems incredibly violent. And of course, the way they build up that scene is, you know, first he is forced to show his captors how to launch a rocket launcher. Mm-hmm. So even as he's given no choice but to show them how to do that, he's thinking, well, this here goes my chance if anybody comes to rescue us, because they're going to know how to shoot him out of the sky. Mm-hmm. So he's already made a couple of decisions that he knows are going to come back to haunt him. And then, you know, shortly after the scene where he beats his friend to death, that's when they show up and rescue them.
Mm-hmm. And it's sort of just the harshness of that scene. It reminded me, it's very similar to the Russian roulette scene in Deer Hunter, where even though that scene, it's like they escape because it's expert cunning, you know, a little bit Hollywoodish there. You can't have them, you know, go that far. But This one, it's sort of like he's forced to make a really just horrible decision, and it's basically they're playing life and death with the prisoners.
Right, and it's there's an element of sport to it, too. I mean, the onlookers are enjoying themselves in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do like what you said about how they don't show it. Because I can imagine, I mean, actually, this was a Hollywood version, and I'll have to ask you, we'll get more into it, but is there a scene like that? And if there is, do they actually show him beating him to a bloody pulp?
You know, it's been a long time since I've watched the American version. I don't remember if they make it more graphic or not.
But I could just imagine that a lot of if this was originally an American, they would just, Tarantino, close-up of his head getting caved in.
If you put Tarantino in charge, yeah, he would definitely have shown all of the blood very lovingly.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I liked about this movie is that it's sort of the commentary about the war and, is it just and everything is slightly brought up during the dinner table conversations. But the film itself, whether this was a just, the war on terror is, is just or not, it's not the point of the movie. And that's what I kind of liked. It doesn't take that stance. That's not the point of the movie. It's about what he's experienced in war times affected him. And that's what I liked. I figure some other movies might have to, make a stance, or there might be something that's some sort of statement. But I like this one. It stays out of that. I really like that.
And war makes a good crucible. Mm-hmm. It you throw somebody into extreme circumstances and then you find out what they're really made of. At no time when you're watching Ulrich Thompson struggle with his decision, do you ever have an idea that you would have a way out of it? Mm-hmm. There's no sense yourself of, well, he made a bad decision. The whole time you're watching him, you're thinking, what are you supposed to do? Which is what makes it powerful.
And I think some people might watch this like, how could he, teach the enemy how to use the rocket, the rocket launches to take down his comrades' helicopters or planes, How could he beat kill one of his own comrades to save his own skin? How could he do that? He's a coward, or he's a traitor, or something like that. I think some people would be like, well, put yourself into that situation. You got a wife and kids. You know that they're probably want to kill you. If you have a chance, would you take it? Or would, it's a tough decision. It's really hard choice to make.
And if you opt
it's not
black
to, and white.
It's not, there's a better path because you end up dead too. Mm-hmm. It's not like you stop them from anything.
Yeah.
If he had refused to beat his friend, they would have killed him too. So there's, it wasn't like he could offer himself up or something like that.
Yeah, they would have killed, they would have found another way to do the rocket launchers, or they would have just killed him and his friend either way. So, but yeah, you're right. And talk about Ulrich Thompson. We watched a film of his earlier with The Celebration, and somewhat similar character. I mean, just sort of you can tell that, especially when he comes back from the war, you can see him very, he keeps everything in. That's the thing. His wife tries to, tell me what happened. He refuses to tell her. That's just sort of like his character in The Celebration, where he has this secret and he can't tell anybody. And won't tell that he finally reveals it. But it's just sort of a very reserved, kept in. And you can see the wear and tear it's done on him and his mental strain.
Especially since he's always been the good one, mm-hmm. the role model. It's a loss of face. He doesn't want to be the guy that he's become.
Yeah, and then, compare that, once again, we talked about before, with Yannick, and the actor is Nikolai.
Likas, yes, who is in lots and lots and lots of stuff. Yeah, he's terrific as the other brother, because he immediately, as soon as Michael disappears, becomes more responsible. He mm-hmm. tells his father, he shouldn't be driving. He offers to fix the kitchen. He plays with his nieces. He suddenly becomes a better person. He goes to see the woman that he robbed. Mm-hmm. He does all of these things to sort of redeem himself.
Yeah, and it's one thing I do like about the movie is that it never gives you a full explanation of whether him and Connie Nielsen, the wife character, actually had an affair. We see them kiss, but that's it. It's sort of, we hear the daughter say, oh, you guys were doing it all the time. But then she asks, well, why did you say this? I was just angry, so I made something up. So you never get the full explanation of if they did it or not. Now, I don't know if in the American version, if they just had a sex scene or something and showed them doing it. But in this movie, you don't know, because maybe they just didn't do it. But
well, what do you think?
They might have done it once, but I can't, it's just hard for me to tell because there's just not enough for me there to say, yes, they did. But
And I think if they had, I think that they definitely would have put it in the Danish movie. I mean, the Danes don't have any problem with sex scenes. So I always sort of assumed that they were moving in that direction. But then Michael, turns out he's alive. So I think that sort of stopped it before it could go any further. But by that time, they both, you know, you develop feelings because you're, first of all, you just bonded over the fact that each of you has lost somebody really close to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he, once again, he sees this is an opportunity to better himself, to be a better person, and he's helping her out, and she's appreciating it, so you can see the bond they're growing, especially that scene when they kiss, that there is an attraction, you're right. And the one scene that you do feel that he was really tempted is the very last scene we see him, and she's in the shower, and it almost feels like he wants to go up there, but he's like, something pushes him back, and he just walks out of the house, and we never see him again.
See, that's the good guy again. I mean, you think maybe the old Yannick would have done something different. At least, you know, looked or something. It's interesting, though, the way the movie sort of sets up different, it's like a triptych. Like, first they'll show, like, the relationship between the two brothers, and then the relationship between Yannick and Michael's wife. And then Michael's relationship with his wife. So there's like three different viewpoints that you get to see.
Yeah, and the film, it's almost implied that Ulrich Thompson and his wife sort of had this connection, like I guess like mental connection or whatever, because like there's a lot of scenes when he's alone at night in Afghanistan by himself just looking at the skies or something, that's shot to his wife and she's in bed and she's looking up at the ceiling. Almost feels like they know, and like she even said, like, when she first gets news, like, he can't be dead. Like, I don't feel it. It almost feels like there's some sort of connection they have with each other.
That's very possible. Suzanne Beer is very fond of these extreme close-ups, and I thought that might have just been a way to swap between storylines. Like, you know, they give you this big close-up of Ulrich Thompson's blue eyes looking out of, you know, the slats where he's being held prisoner, and then it cuts and shows you, you know, like some wheat blowing in the wind, and then all of a sudden you see his wife's extreme close-up of her, so it does a match cut on the eyes, but you know, then you're in Denmark again.
Yeah, it's like it feels has like there's a connection, or they just know where one another is, or however. And you just bring up the director. I do want to talk about one thing, which we also will talk about in the other film we're discussing. It's interesting how she like knew. News is delivered in her movies, like important information, instead of like, you know, this happened, you know, it's always like the aftermath. So then we never hear them specifically say that, but we just cut to them after. So like somebody's like has their mouth over their hands or they're crying or something. Like in this movie, we see a lot more, but that was interesting. Like she doesn't just specifically show them like here's some important information. It's always the aftermath. It's just an interesting way to do that in movies.
I think that's very true, because she does like to show what people do in situations. So it's not so much the situation, but how they react to it. So she doesn't really show the beating scene, but what makes it really powerful is afterwards, when he is in the, you know, he's back in the hole alone this time, and you know, he throws up and he, you know, is obviously anguished about what has happened, and of course also thinking, things are spiraling down, so, you know, what's going to happen to me?
Mm-hmm. And I do want to bring up one minor flaw. I wondered if you thought. This film felt really low budget, and I don't mean that necessarily as an insult. It just means that there wasn't a lot of money backing behind it. And for a movie like this, you don't need a lot of budget. You don't need, like, you know, CGI or any of that stuff. But, like, from the battle scenes, some parts just felt a little bit cheap. I don't mean really negatively towards it, but the low budget really showed in like the battle sequences. I know that's not the point. I totally get that, but I'm just saying this is really nitpicky stuff. But this is like, if I had to nitpick something, that would be it.
I didn't notice that, but if I was going to nitpick something, I thought that the Taliban characters were a little cartoony. You know, they were just so evil. Mm-hmm. You know, all of them were so evil. You know, they had to mock them as well as, you know, beat them, and, you know,
bad guys is being straight up bad.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Sort of like the, I kept thinking of like Team America, World Police, with all the bad terrorists, and all they can say is Durka Durka, Muhammad Jihad.
There was something like that, yes.
And, you know, for those of who don't know, this movie was remade into an American film about 10 years ago. Natalie Portman was the wife. Jake Gyllenhaal, I believe, was the screw-up brother. Mm-hmm. And then Tobey Maguire was the guy that went over to war. And you've said numerous times that you do not like this movie. So tell us a little bit more about it. I've heard of that version. I've never seen it.
Well, when I show clips from Brothers in class, because we're talking about existentialism in Scandinavian film, and it's a great example. So I show the trailer for the American version because, you know, trailers anymore, and this is actually a pet peeve of mine with movie trailers, they show you the whole movie.
Oh, yes.
You know, in 2 minutes, they give you the whole arc. You know, you can see the problem and how it's solved, everything. And so, you know, I'm able to show them that to say, here's, you know, in a microcosm, this is what they did with the American version. Incredible powerhouse people in it, but everybody is so over the top. And mm-hmm. when the Michael character comes back from what has happened to him, he's not just troubled, he's violent in a way that's just very external. You know, he's lashing out at everything. And mm-hmm. you see it for what it is, but you don't see what's happening to him inside the way you do with Ulrich Thompson. You can tell Ulrich Thompson is just shattered. You mm-hmm. know, he cannot reconcile who he used to be with who he is now and what he's done. And he actually at the end ends up, you know, having to get some professional help because he's losing his mind. And as much as I like the actors in the American remake, I just think Tobey Maguire doesn't get across that depth.
It's sort of just like he's showing too much.
Yes.
Yeah, he's just going way over the top where, yeah, like Ulrich
where you
Thompson.
You scream a lot and you flail your arms.
Like Ulrich Thompson has just that one scene at the end where he blows up, but everything else is just, it's boiling,
yes.
but he keeps it in. And that's what makes the payoff bigger in that scene. It's because it's just been boiling and boiling and boiling, and finally it's going to explode. With, like, it seems like in this one, it's just explosion, 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 explosion.
Yeah, and you notice in the American one, and they even show it in the trailer if you want to see the whole movie in 3 minutes, you see the Tobey Maguire character, you know, kind of losing his temper over things like the daughter's, you know, playing with a balloon and that weird sound it makes. Mm-hmm. And, oh, I thought I locked that door, making him seem more psycho than broken. Mm-hmm. And you lose a little bit of sympathy for him because he just seems bad.
Yeah, he's just lashing out at
yes.
everything.
Yes.
It also, for another better, like this movie, which is a great portrayal of PTSD, another film that I think does that well is also American Sniper with Bradley Cooper. And in that movie, which is based on a real life guy, he doesn't like do the Tobey Maguire thing where he's lashing out. You can tell he's just uncomfortable with everything around him. And he almost has one scene where he lashes out because his dog's playing around with one of his kids, but he has flashbacks to where this dog tore up like an innocent civilian. And so he gets like a belt and is about to beat the dog right in front of everybody in a party, but then his wife screams and he just stops. Like it's something like that or in Brothers, the original one is more effective where, like you said, it seems like it's just over the top, like trying to repeatedly get the point to you.
Yes, and very obvious about it in the American mm-hmm. one. And they also, there was a scene in the Danish one where Yannick and the wife are sharing a cigarette. And they turned mm-hmm. it into a joint in the American one.
Of course.
I guess because they figured who smokes anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to make it a little more, I don't know, risque. Unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. And you did talk about the wife, and I forgot to bring her up. This is played by Connie Nielsen, and she's a very versatile actor because you see her in everything. She can do these low-budget Danish films, but she would just talk about recent films. She was just the mom in Wonder Woman, and she was also in Gladiator, a Best Picture winner. So it seems like she's like a Mads Mikkelsen where she can do a little bit of everything.
Every time I see her, I think it's Maria Bello, though. I get the two of them mixed mm-hmm. up because I think they look very similar.
They do look similar.
But she is terrific in this.
Mm-hmm. See, and we talked a lot about the American version. One TV show that I felt was very similar, at least in the first season to this, was Homeland.
Yes.
With Claire Danes and everything. Now, that show, he's a in-sleeper cell for Al-Qaeda. That has nothing to do with this movie. But it shows how the effect he's had and how his wife thought he died and she's moved on with somebody else. It wasn't his brother, but this was his best friend who served with him and came back. And it's in Brothers, in this movie, when he finds out that, you know, his wife's been sleeping with this guy, he attacks the guy and beats him up in front of everybody. Now, they eventually reconcile, but it's those storylines are very similar.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought about that, but that's very true. They do open Homeland with the same sort of idea. Like, here comes the guy who comes back from God knows what, and nobody knows what's happened to him or what he had to do to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And then they spend the rest of this season telling you what happened.
And actually in that show, even though it was revealed that they faked him out, but in that show, like, one of the things he did in that camp was kill one of his best friends. And he was kind of forced to by the Al-Qaeda people, even though later on the show was revealed that they didn't kill him and that guy was also a sleeper cell for Al-Qaeda. But
once you unravel it all.
Yeah, but like that, once again, very similar to that, this the scene in this movie where he has to kill one of his soldier friends. And let's see. So tell us a little bit about Suzanne Biel. We're going to talk more. I'm going to avoid talking about the wedding, because we're going to be doing it in the next episode. But that's a just a brief little synopsis. That's a really good movie. I would recommend it. And she's an Oscar-winning director. And one thing interesting I noticed, I haven't seen the show, but she directed all the episodes of a miniseries called The Night Manager, which had House and Loki, Tom Hiddleston.
Yes. Yes. She's done a lot of things. She's actually the first female director to win a Golden Globe, an Academy Award, an Emmy Award, and a European Film Award.
Wow.
And her background's actually architecture. She studied art and architecture before going into film direction and then was immediately successful. She made a movie called The One and Only, which did really well, and it established her relationship with actress Paprika Steen, who you've seen in many Danish films, including Suzanne Biers. But Brothers was a film that should have done better. It actually did very well in the theaters. But it wasn't sent to the Academy for... it wasn't nominated to be Best Foreign Film.
Interesting.
They sent a Lars von Trier movie instead. Mm-hmm. And then people were upset about it. They said, you know, we really should have. We should have nominated Brothers.
Yeah, they should have. This was much better movie than Dogville. I'll say that.
Well, it wasn't Dogville. It was a movie called. It was a experimental thing that Lars von Trier did. Yeah, and people were very upset that it was, you know, treated that way, because they thought it was much more artistically strong.
Mm-hmm. She's better than Lars von Trier. But anyway,
she's more subtle. I mean, she does things that I think are a lot more artistic in a way. And as far as The Night Manager, that is a terrific little series. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it has Hugh Laurie and Tom Hiddleston in it. And it is sort of a caper, sort of. Mm-hmm. It's based on John le Carré's spy movie, so mm-hmm. it has that sort of noir feel to it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out, because I remember when I watched Better Call Saul, because it came out last year, I was watching Better Call Saul, kept getting advertisements for it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Never got around to watching it, but...
There's so much stuff to binge watch.
Yeah.
Brothers, After the Wedding, and In a Better World are kind of a trilogy. They all deal with ways in which the complex backdrop of war, globalization, and politics supplement and compel family dynamics. Those things come up in all three. The last one was the one she got the Academy Award for, In a Better World.
In a Better World.
But I think that's actually the weakest of the three, even though it's got...
It's the most accoladed.
Terrific actors in it. But you know how sometimes people will win an Academy Award and you'll think, that's because they really should have gotten it for that other movie.
Yeah.
And I think that other movie was After the Wedding.
After the Wedding.
Because it was nominated for
Best Foreign Film. So anything new that she... I was looking. Anything she's coming out with? Has she ever collaborated like here in America with Hollywood studios or any American studios?
Well, The Night Manager is a BBC and AMC project. She has said she wants to approach darker themes in a more extreme way. And when you watch In a Better World, you see that she kind of takes the themes that we've been talking about and then sort of goes to a more serious... storyline. So I guess we have to see what she's going to do next, because she certainly seems to have a feel for putting across drama and letting you see what's going on in people's minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll say she handles like these family dramas really well, because like we talk more about After the Wedding, I talk more about how I could have imagined so many ways it could have gone wrong. It could have, like, even in this movie, it could have been so soap opera-ish or just so silly, like even like the American remake, which you talked about, where it could, you could just be like, oh, that's really melodramatic or really soapy or over the top. And but she does it really well and really subtly, like you mentioned, and yeah, just really good. And she just knows how to handle this kind of material.
Yeah, and she knows how to make you feel for the characters, because when you watch the Danish version, you feel for Ulrich Thomsen, even after, you know, his terrible deeds. But the Tobey Maguire character, you just feel like he's just a crazy person. That's not me. That's not what I would be. He just seems remote from you, and it makes it harder to sympathize. Jake Gyllenhaal, of course, you always like. And he's actually a really good Nikolai Lee Koss sort of double.
He's a good, I was like a little bit off topic, but Gyllenhaal is a really, I think he doesn't get enough respect. Like, you see, he can be the good guy, but even something like Enemy or Nightcrawler, he's just really creepy.
He can
just do those different roles. I don't think he gets the respect he deserves, but anyway.
I think he's a better actor than he's usually credited for, too. I'll agree with you on that.
Okay, so into my question, close to my questions, anything I forgot to talk about or bring up that you want to bring up now?
In terms of brothers?
Brothers or Suzanne Beard in general?
I think we will end up talking about most of the other small items when we talk about After the Wedding.
Okay. I will end with saying that this was much better than Dogville. So.
Now, the way I use this in class, though, is that I introduce the idea of existentialism and I show something from The Seventh Seal. And we're leading into In China, They Eat Dogs, which is a story about two brothers.
Okay.
It's also an existential story about the choices you make and how, you know, you can either take the good path or you can take the bad path. But introducing that idea of, you know, the dual nature of man, brothers is a great intro because you get to show, you know, these very shocking images. Ulrich Thomsen, you know, kind of losing it. Nikolai Lee Koss sort of rising to the occasion, and also gives the students in the class the chance to think about that themselves, you know, their own choices, what would they do? And then when you leave, then when we finally watch In China, They Eat Dogs, it's a comedy. So there is some, you know, moments where you can actually laugh at the outrageous situation.
Yeah, I've looked at it because I got the DVD. I looked at the description of it. Like, this looks like a movie that's like made for me.
I think I'm you'll like for, it. There's, you know, every semester when I show it, at the end of the semester, I always ask the students which movies they liked and what they didn't like. It's always somebody's favorite film, but it's not for everybody.
I think it'll be for me, though. Okay. All right, then. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about Danish director Suzanne Biel and her 2004 film Brothers. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying so long, and we'll see you next week.